What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to another live NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and regular guest on the show, Jack Manuel. And we're talking day two of free agency. How are we doing, guys?
Did everyone know that Corey's favorite band is My Chemical Romance?
I actually do not like that band at all. I mean, yesterday, it was just like a lot to process. Like, I feel like I was an emotional roller coaster all day.
We got it on camera, Corey.
Yeah, we did actually. It's funny, it's just like so much happened. Like today felt like the eye of the storm almost. Like, all right, like I can breathe a little. I can see what has happened around me as we still wait for some of these dominoes to fall.
Ricky Rubio is not on the Pacers. I'll repeat it for you, mate. It's real.
Victory. Yeah, I mean, yesterday was it was literally the craziest day of free agency ever. Like, I think it's easy to say that. Like, we saw more big players sign. We saw moves that we had no idea were going to happen. We saw role players get overpaid. Like Corey said, it was like the process all at once for this just to pop off like that. So, I mean, and we got off, and then the second we got off, there was like 20 more signings. So we got plenty to talk about today.
It remains busy.
Now,
always busy.
Yeah, exactly. So just a quick reminder, you can check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. We're going to run down some teams. And I think one team that's caught a lot of hype, I guess we could start with Philadelphia. When we got off, they ended up signing Al Horford. They completed a trade to send Jimmy Butler to Miami, picking up Richardson. They also, we talked about them re-signing Mike Scott. So, and they re-signed Tobias Harris, which we talked about yesterday. What do you think about Philadelphia in the offseason they're having?
I think that out of free agency right now, if we're talking biggest losers, I would almost say that the Philadelphia 76ers are the biggest winners. You add in a guy who has had the number over Joel Embiid over his time in the NBA in Al Horford, one of the best defensive centers, most capable, switchable players, especially when it comes to the postseason, that's a tick. You add in a Josh Richardson type, who I think is probably going to fit better cohesively than Jimmy Butler did, and allows Tobias Harris to become more of a full version of himself. That's another tick. And a guy who I think is defensively sound and is an incredibly capable player in his own right in terms of as a scorer, create his own shot. And you have Ben Simmons, who I think can now thrive a little bit more with the addition by subtraction with Jimmy Butler. And I think that they need to add some role players and such, but like we sort of spoke about in the Brooklyn Buzz, when you're that sort of capable contending team, you get those buyout, those vet minimum guys. But the Philadelphia 76ers have put themselves right up the top of the Eastern Conference with the Milwaukee Bucks because, you know, they were a couple of bounces away from being in the Eastern Conference Finals themselves, and who knows what could have happened there. But they're all in now, and I think that this feels like the most... Maybe the championship contender. I would probably have them right now for me as my championship favorite almost.
So I believe my camera's frozen.
We can still hear you.
Okay. It always throws me off. So Philly went completely against the grain, right? I mean, this is a very big starting five lineup compared to last year where they thought they had the best starting five in the NBA, at least on paper. I like Josh Richardson, as you said, Jack. I think that's a two-way wing, a guy who can guard point guards around the perimeter. That's kind of been an issue for them is when they had their lineup last year is Ben Simmons or who was the guy to guard, like a Kyrie, for example. Josh Richardson can kind of take over some of those duties. A good three-point shooter. I was listening to the Zach Lowe podcast today. He shot 39% from catch-and-shoot threes. So that should be an area where he can really help the 76ers. It's going to be a lot of defense. I mean, defensively, this team can be really good. And I think Al Horford's such a good safety net for Joel Embiid, a guy who has seemed to be a little bit broken down at the end of season the last couple of years. He can maybe get a little bit more rest. They could also stagger in the minutes, so they always have Horford or Embiid on the floor. You may not necessarily see those guys on the court at the same time a lot, maybe to start games and to finish games. But I like the starting five. Tobias Harris is going to have to be the second best scoring option on this team. The bench, we mentioned the loss of J.J. Redick. They need three-point shooting still. That's still the biggest issue on this roster is who's going to be the guy to take some threes.
Yeah, I think defense, like you guys mentioned, has a really high potential right here because Jack and I were talking about it a little bit. Ben Simmons can defend multiple positions. Richardson, obviously, is a very good defender. I think you do look at spacing, though, as the possibility being an issue. Obviously, Al Horford's contract, as he gets older, isn't going to be as pretty, especially when you're going to have two. You know, Joel Embiid's not necessarily super slow, but he's not a fast guy out there. So then you have both those guys out there, you know, 2 years into the contract. They definitely need to find a way to get some floor spacers out there. And I still think they need to add some guards just to have on the roster. Like, you do need guards eventually if you're playing certain teams. So I think they're still probably the most talented team based off of what we know right now in the East. You know, the Bucks are probably right there depending on what they do. And then obviously Toronto with the whole Kawhi situation. But I think they responded really well to losing Jimmy Butler, which seemed like a lock because they offered him the 5-year deal. He didn't accept. He wanted to go to Miami. And you're losing Jimmy Butler and you're getting Richardson, like you guys said, who might be a better fit. And I think Richardson's more suited as a third or fourth option on the team instead of in Miami where they wanted to be the first or second option. So it's really good for him and he can kind of excel in different areas.
I think on the contract front for Al Horford, I remember hearing Woj say that it's 4 years, $109 million, but $12 million of that is predicated on bonuses. So like if they...
Yeah, so it's 4 years, $97 million, I think you reported.
So I think that looks a little bit better on paper than the full 109. I think that, you know, when you see the 100 past 100 market starts to get a little bit lofty. But I think he's worth it. I think he can age pretty well. You know, his game has never been predicated on athleticism and counting stats. So I think he can remain effective throughout probably at least the next couple of years. And then as he gets that little bit older, maybe gets a little bit worrisome for the salary cap for the purposes. But, you know, I think that we've seen from Elton Brand and the ownership in Philadelphia that they are all in now. And I buy into the fact that I can't remember who said this, but I'm all in on this take where they don't know how healthy Joel Embiid is going to be for the short to long-term future. So they need to strike while the iron is hot. And it's sizzling right now for me.
I want to say too, though, on the Ben Simmons front, like this is a really important year for him, I think, going forward. And I think this could be problematic in a way for the fact that this is a very on paper half court driven looking team. And Ben Simmons has yet to be a good half court player. He's the guy who likes to get out and run and get out, you know, transition. Where having now Horford and Embiid, you really can't get that, you know, you can't get out on the run that much anymore. So I wonder how they manage that. And again, we've seen the videos already of Ben Simmons in the gym working on his jump shot. That's going to be pivotal for this team if he can form some kind of mid-range shot, because he can't be the same half-court player he was last year with them losing Jimmy Butler, especially in late-game situations. That's what my biggest concern is. What does this team look like in the final 5 minutes of an NBA game?
It's a great point. And I think you look at him and he just needs to excel, and then there's going to be less spacing, so it's going to be on him to make more moves down there. I brought up to Jack, I think one issue you could look at this team, the one thing I'd be a little concerned about, playing so many big guys and being Tobias Harris, Al Horford, Joel Embiid being your best players, you know, out there. And then you have Ben Simmons and Richardson who are, you know, great athletes, but the other three are kind of slow. Teams can look to kind of attack them in transition. It's going to be a lot on Ben Simmons both ways of the floor. We saw him a lot in the playoffs be the first guy back defensively. It's going to be on him to pretty much do that every possession because, you know, Al Horford, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris aren't going to be racing down to the other side of the court.
Yo, homies, we've got some questions and comments. We want to address them from the chat.
Drop them in.
Insert cool name. Thanks for listening again, my dude. He had this question while we were doing the buzz. I said we'd address it on a later episode. Agree or disagree? Are the Jazz the second biggest winner of free agency?
Number one being the Nets.
Number one being the Sixers. Give me your 1, 2, 3. Actually, there we go.
There's no way the Nets can't be number one. Like, it's literally impossible. Like, you just signed two of the top 15 players. You changed the perception of your brand forever. You didn't lose anything. You ended up with a first-round pick with the one player you lost in a sign-and trade. Like, it's a clear-cut number one because when 2021 starts, you are arguably the favorite to win the East, depending on the development and the health of the other guys. Go ahead, Corey.
I just want to say the only argument I'd say for the Nets not winning this offseason would be if the Lakers get Kawhi, then you could say the pairing of AD and Kawhi. But like as of right now, if you don't give up any of your talent, really, and you got Durant and Irving, you definitely won the offseason.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the Jazz are up there, though, too. I mean, Philly's up there. I maybe like what the Jazz are doing more from a fit perspective.
Yeah, they got guys that just fit what they do. I mean, they just slid in different pieces into better fits into different roles, as the Sixers kind of just changing the entire look of their roster.
Yeah, and I think the one thing with the Sixers is you kind of guys hinted at it. They're going against the grain, going with all these big guys where, you know, the Jazz are kind of throwing a lineup where they're catching up with the current NBA. They had the defense. Now they're finally adding the offense and spacing. And you know, we talked about it a lot in the last show. We're kind of banking on Donovan Mitchell to take that next step of having such a better supporting cast.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Conley and Bogdanovich are just so cohesive fits. And obviously the fact that now...
And Ed Davis, I got him too.
And Ed Davis as well. We know all about him as a backup to Rudy Gobert. It's going to be... There are a lot of people's Western Conference favorites right now. I'd probably have them around that sort of range. A team that I think goes under the radar a little bit that we haven't spoken about and I raved about just before with you guys, before we started recording, is the New Orleans Pelicans. You know, adding Derek Favors and J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick, former Duke alumni as well, but joining a former another Duke dude and Zion Williamson. It just improves, you know, David Griffin is just doing tick, 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 tick across the board. Gail Benson, you know, the hiring of him might be a masterstroke that is turning the franchise around in a similar way that the Nets have done with Sean Marks. I'm really excited to see them. They're going to be the league pass darlings. They're already becoming my second favorite team. Obviously, there's still a couple of moves that need to be made, but, you know, they could make the playoffs with this roster right now.
Yeah, I mean, to come away, sorry to cut you off, Corey, to come away with like a turnaround after losing one of these top players in the NBA, usually it's a lot of draft picks, but they're able to get a lot of good players, flip some of the picks they got and turn it into more players. They have future assets. They have some decent players in the roster. We mentioned J.J. Redick being in need, picking up Derek Favors. Just a lot of positives going on for New Orleans to bounce back so quickly from losing a superstar talent.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a tremendous month for the Pelicans. I mean, maybe month and a week. I mean, it's basically been a very quick turnaround to be in one of the best rebuilding situations in the NBA. Adding J.J. Redick for three-point shooting, adding now Derek Favors to play the small ball five alongside Zion, which fits perfectly because then they can still get out and run. I think Brandon Ingram, Lonzo, we mentioned these guys, still so much potential, and they still have some money, I believe, available to go out and perhaps get more shooting. I would try and get some sort of three-point shooting again, either the guard position or a wing. But the Pelicans are in position to, I don't know if this is a hot take, but to compete probably for a seventh or eighth seed in the in the West.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think we're going to have to wait until the end of the year because it seems like there's a lot of teams in the West that'll be pretty good again, like it seems like it is every year. But we'll obviously get deeper in the preview. But I think they're in a position right now where they could be really good depending on – I think some of it's going to come with the jumps with the guys that we mentioned, like Lonzo, Ingram, even like Josh Hart. You know, how good is Zion in his first year? You know, how good is Hayes? Like, obviously, they're going to depend on a lot of young players. How do they develop in their first NBA season or second or third?
And what's the look for Gentry? Is he the head coach going forward now that you have all these young guys?
They re-signed him, didn't they? Or they extended his contract, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know if that means necessarily too much.
I honestly think that this fit, this roster right now, David Griffin is almost building a roster that suits Alvin Gentry's coaching style. You know, a team that is going to run, you know, that's going to put up 120 points a night, might concede 130 on the other end, but Derek Favors as a defensive force, you know, when he was on the floor with the Utah Jazz, they didn't lose anything, despite the fact that Rudy Gobert is probably, you know, two-time Defensive Player of the Year winner. I think that they've got all the pieces right now, like you said, Corey, to be a seventh or eighth seed. And I reckon they could push for a sixth or fifth, depending on how things mesh and if Zion Williamson gets to that potential. But a couple more questions, homies. Do we want to keep at them?
Yeah, go for it.
So we've got Lekeston. Who is getting DeMarcus Cousins?
That's a mystery. DeMarcus Cousins' front has been extremely quiet. We haven't really heard anything. I mean, at this point, he's going to take a lot less money than we probably anticipated going to the offseason. Maybe the NBA Finals didn't really help his case in getting a better contract. So I'm not sure. I mean, I actually think is there potential for him to land in Dallas?
I think Dallas is a possibility. I've seen rumors of him heading back to Sacramento, but apparently Sacramento doesn't want him. I've heard rumors about the Lakers. You think of this, the teams with space. You know, I don't know if DeMarcus Cousins is going to be getting a hefty contract that he wants. You know, we saw the rumors pre-free agency that he would be heading to New York. You know, they could add another center to their roster. Why not? Bobby Portis, Taj Gibson, Julius Randle. Why not get DeMarcus Cousins? Just go like a five-man big lineup with Mitchell Robinson out there too. But in all seriousness, yeah, I think that the Kings and the Lakers to me seem like one that if they strike out on Kawhi Leonard or they could get him on the cheap, Seems like, to me, a guy that they could certainly add. Seems like a Lakers-ish sort of fit as well. But outside of that, you know, with the teams with space, you know, you look at Atlanta and all these other sort of teams, you don't know where DeMarcus is going to be. Maybe he re-ups in Golden State again for another sort of small deal and tries to hit the free agency market next year.
I think that's possible.
When the market isn't necessarily going to be as saturated. And maybe if he has a better season, a really good run at it, and really proves his worth, he might get that massive payday that he wants. Obviously, that's what he wanted this season. But the basketball gods obviously didn't necessarily have that waiting for him. But, you know, it's almost fascinating that we haven't seen necessarily anything about him. But I think because Kawhi Leonard almost has a stranglehold on the free agency right now and everything that happens, the players around him are obviously just waiting in the wings to an extent to see what happens with him.
Yeah. I mean, with Enes Kanter getting signed today, for example, to the Celtics for 2 years, $10 million, Cousins is not getting more than that, I think, coming off the torn quad. And you look at teams, I guess the Knicks would be a place. I think I like the thought of Dallas, perhaps. They got Seth Curry today, which I thought was a solid move, bringing him back, adding some more three-point shooting around Doncic and Porzingis. I think the Lakers would be an outside chance, the Anthony Davis relationship, DeMarcus Cousins. There's something that makes sense about that, I think. I would say, like, Dark Horse Miami. They just move Whiteside. Maybe they give him the vet minimum, and they just kind of say, oh, Butler, look, now we got, you know, if healthy, possibly a top 20 star next year. But there's not a lot of destination for big men right now. The market really cleaned them up fast.
Yeah, and we saw how bad he looked defensively in the finals. That doesn't really help. I think it would almost make sense for him to take another one-year deal, get healthy, like Jack mentioned, showcase his skills, go into next year's free agent class where there isn't a ton of big names. He could probably get some money because, like you said, Corey, the big market really isn't that crazy right now. Like, solid players are only getting the room exception, so 2 years, $10 million. So, interesting. He'll be an interesting guy. I mean, the Laker front, too, makes a little bit of sense. If they strike out, it's kind of like, okay, we got DeMarcus Cousins. He's another big name for the brand.
Will.i.am has said, where is Danny Green going?
Well, the only thing I've heard about Danny Green is if Kawhi were to go back to Toronto, Danny Green would go back to Toronto. Other than that, I heard there's offers from, I believe, Dallas on the table.
Yeah, I heard that one as well.
Yeah, other than that, I'm not really sure on the Danny Green front because a lot of the money got soaked up, and he's a guy that probably could have got a decent paycheck, but he obviously seems like he's into winning and trying to get back Kawhi back to Toronto.
I would also say that Dallas, probably after getting Seth Curry's out of the running.
He's a little bit different, though. He's a little bit more of a true wing, where Seth is more of like a guard.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be someone that splashes a little bit for Danny Green. Obviously, you know, I don't understand. And he sort of said that, you know, he'll be revealing on his like podcast and Yahoo Sports Canada. So I think keeping an eye on those sort of pages. But Danny Green didn't have the greatest of postseasons. I think that he's now heading into the twilight of his career. So I think obviously wanting to re-up with Kawhi Leonard benefits him most. So I think that if you keep the Lakers in sort of mind for that and re-signing in Toronto for some sort of deal too. But, you know, because the market is so bereft right now, we've seen so many players already sign. He's one of the top guys still out there, you know, with DeMarcus Cousins, Kawhi Leonard and the like. So we'll have to see. And watch this space because we might have to do another one on an emergency Danny Green Cousins podcast.
Hey, it's a possibility. What else we got in the chat, Jack?
Crimson Striker, explain what the Wolves are doing. RIP Minnesota.
Their salary cap books are really bad. That's what happens. You spend your money wrong, you can't do anything. They did get Jordan Bell, though, which I think is at least a decent player. Yeah.
I like it as a sort of backup, sort of tandem with Karl Anthony Towns. I think that could be good. They got Shabazz Napier as well, too.
They got Shabazz and Trevion Graham in part of that D'Angelo Russell sign and trade thing, which are non-guaranteed, so it's no guarantee they actually keep those guys.
But I think we saw some good things with Shabazz Napier last season, and I think that if they're going down the route where now, I mean, they've still got Jeff Teague on the roster, I think they need to somehow get rid of him because
Jones is a restricted free agent.
And that's what I was thinking. You know, I'll go down the route of Tyus Jones and Shabazz Napier as just sort of two guard rotation, and maybe having some other sort of ball handler around there as well, because I think Tyus Jones could be something pretty special. Not necessarily a fully capable guy, but a really solid starter, Darren Collison sort of type player, where he can, you know, and his assist turnover ratio, I think last season, I think was the best in the league, or the best that it's been for a very long time. So I don't necessarily hate what they're doing, because I know, and there's, you know, but in pre-free agency, we heard Zach Lowe sort of reporting that the Minnesota Timberwolves are really trying to make some moves, you know, offering up Andrew Wiggins, obviously.
Offering him up, that's a big money right there. Woo.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where that guy is going to land. I think that that's probably the major reason why they weren't able to land D'Angelo Russell, despite Carl Anthony Towns and his frustrations. But Minnesota, they're an interesting one. They've got, you know, this generational superstar in Carl Anthony Towns. And it seems to me it's going to be going down the route similarly of what happened to Anthony Davis. He's going to probably demand a trade. Kevin Garnett style, like in Minnesota, you know, a couple of years ago himself. But Minnesota, you know, who knows what they're doing. Right now, they're down in the doldrums of the Western Conference, it seems.
That's why you just don't make bad signings. You do these long-term contracts, or you overreact to things, and that's what happens.
Hey. He promised the front office he would play defense. Promised them, guys.
Jack, you ended right where I was going to start, and that's the fact that we're right on track of this prediction I made at some point where Carl Anthony Towns requests a trade in the next 2-3 years. That's like right on track to happen. You as Nick has been kind of harping the last couple of days, when you lock up cap space to these players that are mid-level, like an Andrew Wiggins, a Jeff Teague, you stranglehold your franchise. And when you have a young talent in Carl Anthony Towns, the patience is just real thin, especially when you have opportunities to pair him with his best friend, D'Angelo Russell. When you have those opportunities to pair friends, especially now, this is the player empowerment movement. Friends, like players are friends, and friends want to play together. And if you're a team and you can't necessarily get a top friend of one of your stars who wants to play with your star, then that makes your star's position of trying to get out when he can a lot more likely. And I think Towns, this is the beginning of the end for Towns in Minnesota. I truly believe that.
The only hope they have is that the max deal between Golden State and the sign-and-trade deal is that D'Angelo Russell is going to end up getting traded to Minnesota around December. That's been like the rumor Jack and I mentioned a little bit on the buzz. That's a saving grace. It's like an under the table handshake. Like we talked about, maybe they send like Robert Covington, or maybe they send Jeff Teague's expiring contract as well or something, just to get it done with. And then maybe Golden State can get an asset, or maybe they end up with one of the young guys they have.
Yeah, the faceless man makes some good points. We'll get to one in a second, but insert cool name. We'll get let the faceless man speak again. Can you tell me what my Pacers are doing? I'm kind of confused in a good way.
We have a Pacers question. What the hell year is it? I'm confused. Yeah. What are we doing?
He said in a good way. He's kind of confused, or he just wants some confirmation of what the plan is, Corey.
Don't be hating on our Pacer
listener.
Come on, man.
The good thing about what the Pacers are doing is the fact that they didn't lock up money in someone who's in the prime of their career, likely to go down. I think Thaddeus Young and Bogdanović, you can make the case that their best basketball is behind them, in essence, or that they're not going to get much better. Bogdanović last year being 49, 42, and 88 shooting splits, is that repeatable? Maybe. But I don't think you want to rely on that. I don't think that's what you want. Like I've said this before, I don't think he can be your third best player on a championship level team. And then Thaddeus Young, you get what you get with Thaddeus Young, a little bit of everything. But now you have the position where Oladipo comes back, and this is the first time ever he's going to have a lot of guys around him who can create their own shot. Jeremy Lin can create his own shot. Malcolm Brogdon, to a degree, can create his own shot. A very good three-point shooter, a very good defender. The guards around Oladipo are the best that he's had since he's been a Pacer. You still have the hope that Aaron Holiday, Edmund Sumner, who they just re-signed for 3 years, these guys pop. They must see something to Edmund Sumner to already be working on an extension with them for 3 years, $6.8 million, at least the final number. You want those guys to pop. And then realistically, it's how's Oladipo look, and then it's Sabonis is going to play the four. Is he going to get quick enough to play the four? Or are they just going to try and do what Philly's doing and go big with Turner and Sabonis? Do they stagger the minutes? But basically, the Pacers have set themselves up for the fact that they're young. Yes, supposedly a restricted free agent, but the next 2-3 years, this team is pretty much intact.
Yeah. I mean, I think they made some good moves. I think you mentioned offensively having a little bit more playmaking-wise, a little bit more versatility. You know, you look at Jeremy Lamb, he can play the two or the three. TJ Warren can really play the three or the four. And then it's just like being better offensively. Like, we knew last year they're a really good defensive team. You look at the first round against Boston, they just couldn't score. And now they have guys that can score on their own without the offense running. Say things kind of gets put down to the last 8 seconds of the shot clock, which happens a lot in the playoffs. There's guys that can make shots on this team, not named Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, I really liked the Jeremy Lamb signing. I thought he was Charlotte's second best player. And now they have only their third best player to sort of Terry Rozier, sorry. But we'll get to some signings and to some different teams. But I think the Pacers have taken a step up from last season. Obviously, you know, we talked a little bit about it on previous episodes and such. It's all predicated on Victor Oladipo's health. If he is back and building towards his best self, then I think the Pacers could be somewhat of a contender, because I think that they've got the nucleus here. Obviously, like Corey was sort of harping on, that front court rotation is going to be, you know, what is going to happen? Is Sabonis going to start shooting some threes? Is Miles Turner is going to be given free rein by Nate McMillan to jack some up? That front court rotation, I mean, the bigs, it seems to me that size is cool again in the NBA with what's happening in Philadelphia as well. But, you know, I like what the Pacers are doing. I think that they could be take a step forward compared to last season. It's going to be how they are coached and how the rotations are, but I like their signings. And, you know, it's nice to sort of see these lower teams, these lesser market teams, you know, getting some nice signings. And Corey was able to lose his mind and his body, and I was able to be there and present for that.
Yeah, and I want to say, too, on the Pacers front, that I think and it's gone.
He was just thinking about himself pulling a shirt up yesterday. Getting his off YouTube. But I think we should probably talk about the Jimmy Butler trade. We mentioned it from the Richardson side. Jimmy Butler.
Related specifically to it in there. Crimson Striker, Miami Heat after finally trading for Jimmy Butler. Playoff team or no?
Yeah, I'll get into the question. I'll just give the full details of the trade. So it's a four-way trade between the Heat, the Sixers, and the Clippers. So obviously Jimmy Butler to the Heat, Hassan Whiteside to Portland, Richardson to Philadelphia, and a 2023 first-round pick to the Clippers. And I think the Clippers also get Mo Harkless, and then Myers Leonard also goes to the Heat as well. So this is a complicated trade. Obviously, this one almost fell through because of the whole Goran Dragic thing, but we'll stick to the Miami side. Picking up Jimmy Butler in a year where they had negative cap space, I think is pretty impressive, but I'm not really sure how far it takes his team.
Yeah, I mean, Jorge really delved deep into it on Heat Is Gonna Heat. Subscribe to that one and this one on iTunes, the OGD Podcast Network. But I think that Jimmy just wanted to play in Miami. I think that we sort of started to see those trickles and rumors sort of come out when we saw, you know, Dwayne Wade tweet out, you know, he's not coming back to the Lakers. If he's coming back for anything, it's for Jimmy Butler if he heads to Miami. Who knows? That might actually happen now. And that would make Miami and Pat Riley, you know, make Miami a little more relevant again. You know, you have a superstar in Jimmy Butler. You're a playoff team. You know, Jimmy Butler, you look at Jimmy Butler by himself in Chicago, it's a sort of similar sort of situation. You know, he brings it to a playoffs. And with there's so much parity and so much openness in the league. I think that they've got a chance to push to maybe even a sixth seed, depending on how things work around them and how chemistry works around them. But I think the Heat will be really good. And I think Adrian Dizon makes a good point in the chat too, that Bam Adebayo, I think, is going to be a nice piece and how he fits alongside Justice Winslow. But yeah, Jorge has plenty of sort of delved deep into it. But I think they're a playoff team.
I mean, I think they're a low-end playoff team, yeah. I still don't necessarily understand really Jimmy Butler's thinking, because it was reported that he got the 5-year max from Philly and said, Nah, I'm good. And I know that it's said that the way Miami treated Dwayne Wade on his farewell tour really had an impact on Jimmy Butler as well, which I don't know Jimmy Butler knows that you can pretty much get that anywhere if you've been with the team long enough. Generally, when you keep bouncing around, you don't get that kind of love on a retirement tour. But with that said, Miami, Pat Riley has shown that the Godfather took like a year off maybe and just was sleeping, trying to think of ways to make this team better. And now he's in full force mode. Flipping Whiteside is a G move if I've ever seen one. I mean, I didn't think that guy was movable. And then you get Jimmy Butler. Whatever they do, rest. I know there's rumbling about Bradley Beal. Yeah, with the young
guys. Which doesn't even seem possible. Like,
no, it doesn't. If it does, Pat Riley statue outside of every arena, I guess. I don't know. He would need something. That'd be impressive. Yeah. But I think it's a solid move. You get a star or an all-star, whatever you want to see Jimmy Butler as. You're competitive. I think in 7-8 seed is possible. I mean, Orlando made the playoffs last year, and I think Miami isn't going to be much worse or much better than Orlando.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on Winslow and Bam. Like you guys said, low-end playoff team. It's impressive. It feels so like Portland has interest in Whiteside. Like they wanted to acquire Whiteside as maybe like a backup plan. Or I heard people mention maybe you get Whiteside, then you can flip him at the deadline because he's expiring in a Kevin Love deal.
Do we want to hear a few more questions?
Go for it.
So we've got Adrian Dizon. Real question, what's going to happen to Houston?
They're going to be Houston. I mean, pretty much they're going to go back with almost the same exact team. Chris Paul probably isn't going to be any better. He's, if anything, a little bit worse. James Harden will probably maintain. I think you're, like, hoping Clint Capela gets better. Maybe you're hoping...
How is he going to get better when, like, he's just been in every trade rumor and been tossed around, like, you know...
I'm just saying a praise if I was a Houston fan. That would just be my hope. Not saying it's going to happen. I think the one guy that maybe could get better on that team, but I don't know how much better he can get, would be, like, Daniel House. Obviously, like his first, you know, full year in the NBA, didn't even get to play a ton of games. But other than that, I'm not really sure Houston, like Daryl Morey needs to get creative and try to make some type of move maybe during the season. But they're going to be what they were last year, essentially, again this year.
I think it's ironic because Daryl Morey was kind of like talking that ish that he was about to have a giant free agency. And we have yet to see the giant free agency. Now, granted, it's not over yet. We're still, believe it or not, in day two. I know it feels like day seven because everyone's off the board.
Feels like August 1st.
But it's, yeah, when we got Summer League tonight even started. Yeah. I don't see Houston changing it up much. This is a run it back team. And I don't think it's bad necessarily to run it back. I mean, this was still a really good team in the Western Conference. You have to think that if Kawhi doesn't go to the Lakers, the West is still wide open if Kawhi doesn't end up in on the Lakers. So I think it's not terrible for the Rockets to run it back, but I think be cautious of the fact that, like, Chris Paul definitely taking a step back. What is Eric Gordon going to look like? How can James Harden continue to carry the load to Clint Capela? As you mentioned, Nick, does he get any better? How do these role players mix? You know, Houston could easily be, I think, a 1-2 seed in the West, or they could easily kind of fall back to the medium and be like a 4-6 seed.
Yeah. Next question, Crimson Striker. After the Wesley Matthews vet minimum signing, can the Bucks still be considered contenders as of now?
Yeah. I mean, their core is still mostly there. They just lost Malcolm Brogdon, which they still got to where they, to what, the second round of the playoffs without him. And then he came back and he was healthy after that. But I think they'll be okay. I think, you know, they're hoping for like Dante DiVincenzo to kind of take a step and maybe fill in some of that role. Obviously, Giannis is probably going to get a little bit better. Like, we've seen him improve the last couple seasons. Maybe he can add somewhat of a jump shot. But other than that, I mean, I don't think they're going to be much better or much worse than they were last year, too.
Yeah, I think you're losing Brogdon, but not that I'm obviously a little bit higher on Brogdon because he's on the Pacers now. But I don't think it's necessarily a terrible replacement order. I mean, losing Brogdon and then retaining George Hill, bringing in Wesley Matthews, it's not like a terrible replacement order. I mean, Wesley Matthews, even on the Pacers last year, like, yeah, shooting-wise, very streaky. But the guy does only shoot three-point shots, which is, again, the type of offensive player Milwaukee wants. And defensively, he is still a very good defender. I mean, very handsy, very physical, fits with what Milwaukee wants to do schematically. So I don't think it's terrible. I think they got the right guys to replace the whole of Brogdon and for a little bit cheaper.
DJ Wilson actually played – sorry to cut you off, Jack. DJ Wilson actually played, like, really good halfway through the season. He's a guy that could get better.
Yeah, I think that they're 1A in the sort of championship sort of conversation. For me, with the Sixers, you know, maybe the Jazz, maybe, you know, the Lakers, depending on what happens with them. But, you know, you've got the MVP, a guy who hasn't even scratched his potential yet. And we know how hard Giannis works in the offseason. He's going to be putting in the work to get his team back and bigger and better. So they're absolutely a bona fide contender and should be considered one of, if not the championship favorite alongside the Sixers, the Jazz, and those sort of teams because they've got the best player out of those guys. You know, and Giannis is healthy. You know, they've got a great coach, the coach of the year as well. And yeah, Corey sort of mentioned, you know, obviously he knows a little bit about Wesley Matthews, so I trust his opinion. I think he's going to be a nice fit there too. But we've got one. Where did that question go? Crimson Striker. No, that was the one I just did. Insert cool name. Do you believe the Grizzlies can make the playoffs? They are sneakily building a dynasty. I like their moves, though. I like the little...
Yeah, they've had a good rebuilding move offseason, but they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, there's a difference between rebuilding nicely and being a playoff fringe team. I think Memphis will be exciting next year. I think we'll enjoy watching these young guys develop. But let's not be fooled that this team probably wins somewhere between 20 and 30 games. Maybe 33 as like best case scenario, but
I think that's even friendly. I mean, like most of the veterans I think on their team is probably going to get bought out.
I mean, Corey, you've been mean to the Atlanta Hawks for a very long time, and the Memphis Grizzlies, your new Atlanta Hawks.
No, actually, I don't know who's taking that reign. I don't know who's going to be the team.
For the Hawks, it worked out well for the Hawks. Like they're looking good now.
In spite of Corey's hatred,
Trey Young out of the league in 5 years, right?
Changed it to seven, but on the Grizzlies, Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant, Brendan Clark. I like that small nucleus, and obviously you buy out an Andre Iguodala, you get a pick in return. The front office there is making some nice moves and building slowly and steadily in a similar way to what the Atlanta Hawks are doing. And I think, you know, that sort of small core nucleus, obviously there's going to be plenty of growing pains, but I think that it's exciting to watch a young team on the rise. And they've got a young nucleus that we don't know what it's going to be. Jaren Jackson Jr.'s ceiling is an Al Horford type. Ja Morant, what is he going to be? Is he going to be John Wall, Russell Westbrook, or is he going to be a lesser light? We just don't know. And Brandon Clark seems to me to be one of the better role players in this draft, if I'm believing, you know, guys like Dylan Jackson, Dalton Pence, and Matt Esposito. But insert cool name jumped in again. Do you think Denver overpaid for Jamal Murray? Yes.
I think they invested him and they're hoping that he continues to improve. I think he's like, we kind of compared him at times to like D'Angelo Russell being similar. They're both really inconsistent players. And at moments you're like, wow, this guy's really good. Like he had a couple fourth quarters against the Spurs where he was amazing and he's the reason they won. And then other games, you know, he wasn't as well. So I think when you're a small market like that though, sometimes you end up overpaying players. And one thing that we haven't talked about in Denver, I know this isn't related, but getting back Michael Porter Jr., it's like a really big signing for them.
Bol Bol, baby. Bol Bol. I think they might have overpaid for him a little bit. I just don't understand, like, when, in a similar way with the Lakers-Pelicans trade, when you're not, there's no competition around you, why are you overpaying someone for something that you know you've already got? Like, he's going to be a restricted free agent. You know, the number seems lofty. You know, I think that he proved himself, one thing that you have at D'Angelo Russell, he proved himself a little bit more in the playoffs than D'Angelo Russell did. So I think he's got that on him. I think Jamal Murray has a little more spark and bounce about him than D'Angelo Russell does. I think they're on similar sort of trajectories where they could sort of be some of the better point guards in this league. And I'm fascinated to watch, as those two guys sort of play out. And as they battle a little bit more next season in the Western Conference. But it was certainly a little bit of an overpay from me.
I think it's way too early to give a player like Jamal Murray that kind of money.
He's 22.
Right, 22, and he's been for 41 games worth that money in the season and 41 games. Like, he's just a 50-50 player. Like, there's nights where I'm thinking Jamal Murray could be a top 10 point guard, and there's nights where I'm like, yeah, he's a high-teen point guard or a mid-teen point guard. The offense is what you like. The playmaking, he's a little bit underrated, I think, but defensively, he's a little bit of a mess at times. Obviously, there's still loads of potential there. But if you're giving him this kind of money, it feels like you think he might be better than Nikola Jokic down in the future or along in the future. And I'm not sure I see that right now from Jamal Murray. That would be my only concern. But again, 22, a lot of time.
Yeah, I like the point you brought up, Jack. The fact is that, like, he'll be a restricted free agent. Now all you essentially did is just mess up your chances. I mean, they're not going to sign big free agents anyways, but like you mess up the chance because when you have guys that are going to be a restricted free agent, you can kind of hold on to them, go sign your other guys, and then potentially go over, not even the into the luxury tax, but just over the tax line.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I guess we should hit up the Lakers and Crimson Striker. Are the Lakers going to have any kind of bench at this rate with all the guys dropping like flies in the free agency realm?
Seriously, like, and it's Kawhi or bust for them right now. And like, they can sign other guys and maybe fill out the roster, and that might end up being better for them. But the role players that they essentially probably would have targeted are mostly off the board.
It's faceless man.
Now, they got Troy Daniels today. That was the first role player they picked up for 3-point shooting.
Big signing, bro.
I mean, yeah, I mean the Lakers are in trouble because it kind of segues into it because I'm like the Lakers are in trouble with role players because the Knicks signed every single role player on the market who can shoot. It feels like, I mean, god damn, just clean everybody up, like hold all the boardwalks in Monopoly, you bastards, or all the trains.
It's clever.
Yeah, so I think the Lakers definitely are Kawhi or bust. And I know on Twitter today there's a lot of rumors. Oh, it's Kawhi to the Lakers right now. That's the heavy rumblings. I don't believe any of that smokescreen trash until I see it at this point in time. But they're definitely going to be in trouble if Kawhi goes to the Lakers. You just can't get depth. I mean, there's not a lot of guys left.
I just don't have a roster. And whereas the Clippers, who are the obvious other contender with the Toronto Raptors and the Raptors, they have at least the nucleus of a team there. Whereas you're building from square one and you've got, you know, four chess pieces on the board. You've got, you know, a pawn in, you know, Troy Daniels. You've got your queen and king in Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And you might be adding another queen and king in that sort of sense. But, you know, you need to add, you know, these knights. You need to add – I really like this analogy that I'm giving. You need to add your rooks. You need to add your bishops. And with so many guys off the board, like you guys have mentioned, you know, people were talking about, you know, the likes of, you know, Terrence Ross, Patrick Beverley, these sort of names, but they're all getting signed up. So I think that, you know, the Morris twins are still out there, aren't they?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're signed by Clutch, aren't they?
Yeah, there's been ties that they could possibly, you know.
They can sign both of them, but then they're, like, really forward heavy on that roster with, like, LeBron, Kuz, two Morris twins, and then AD, who prefers to play power forward.
So you know how this probably breaks down? The Lakers get Kawhi, and then they end up signing Shumpert, getting J.R. Smith, and bring back Rondo, and that's the team they roll out.
Kyle Korver gets bought out, ends up.
Yeah, bring back Kaz, baby.
Yeah.
Where Dell Dobat? Where Dell at?
Oh man, I'd love that. KCP, you know, he's still there. Yeah. He's not been renounced, but you know, Nerlens Noel now, obviously, that deal has been. It's actually happening in OKC. Yeah.
He went back, and then he wanted to like renegotiate, and now it actually went through.
I think, you know, they've still got the JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson are still on the board. To me, that, you know, I think JaVale McGee seems incredibly likely as a sort of center type. You know, I thought he was good for them last season. I don't think that he was a defensive player of the year candidate, as LeBron James had put out there. I wouldn't want Rajon Rondo on the roster. As much as Corey would love him, I wouldn't want Lance Stevenson on the roster either. But there's names, but it's not the best that they could get. If they had have struck while the iron is hot, but they're all in when it comes to Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, I mean, like, in terms of shooting, like, that's what you would add if you have players like that. I don't know really where they're going to get shooting, like, in terms of the players that are available other than the buyout guys we mentioned.
Yeah, KCP, I think J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver, those sort of really lesser-like guys. And, you know, I'll throw in a name that's probably been bandied around a little bit too. I'll actually ask you guys, who would you prefer to have, Joakim Noah, or would you prefer to have JaVale McGee?
That's a tough question because Joakim Noah played surprisingly well last year for Memphis.
It did.
But I think that could be like a flash in the pan, last little hoorah for his age and all the miles, so I'd probably go JaVale McGee.
Yeah, I think Joakim Noah said that the problem in New York was that he couldn't handle the city, like that it was just too much, like too much of a distraction. That's why he really wasn't good with the Knicks, like he was partying too much. Similar thing would happen with the Lakers. I think JaVale McGee might make sense. The only thing with Joakim Noah that couldn't make it happen would be like playing with all the big names, having a chance at a championship.
But he hates LeBron too, though.
Yeah.
Like, I know they don't like each other.
A lot of players have hated LeBron, and then as soon as they team up with him, like, I love this guy.
Yeah,
true.
What did you guys think of the Kevon Looney signing?
Yeah, I think it kind of seemed like Golden State had to make sure that happened. Like, they needed to retain this guy.
Yeah, you couldn't afford to lose Looney, I think, after last postseason, especially with the grit, the fact that he played injured too. You know, you got rid of Durant, Iggy. I don't know. I feel like if he wanted to come back, you do whatever you can to bring him back. It's also just looks good on your franchise with all the injuries they've had. You know, another guy getting hurt.
Freaking broken collarbone. Like, yeah. He's a freaking champ.
So I'm glad they brought him back.
Yeah.
I got a list of the top remaining free agents if you guys want me to read it off.
I was just going to say that they got Kevon Looney as well for unders, 3 years, $50 million. I think that's a really nice deal.
Yeah, value. Nice value deal, especially because their cap is not in a good place. Obviously, we know Kawhi's a free agent, DeMarcus Cousins, Danny Green, Marcus Morris, Jermichael Green's a solid player, Delano Wright, restricted free agent, Kelly Oubre, restricted free agent, Willie Cauley-Stein, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jabari Parker. Avery Bradley, I don't think, is technically a free agent. I think he needs to be bought out. Emmanuel Mudiay could maybe be a point guard that the Lakers sign. KCP, who we mentioned, Rajon Rondo, Carmelo Anthony, Jeff Green, Justin Holiday, Jared Dudley, Markieff Morris, James Ennis, you know, and other guys we've mentioned. But the list is not pretty.
Yeah, it's not the prettiest of lists, that's for sure. But I guess we should touch on it. Where do you guys think the Kawhi Leonard is going to land?
No idea.
I don't even, like, at this point, the speculation, I mean, it could drive you insane. I think it's L.A., but I don't know. I think the Clippers, to me, make more sense for who I think Kawhi is, but I don't freaking know Kawhi. I don't know what he does. I don't know what kind of cereal he likes. So he could go to the Lakers. He could go to the Clippers. I think it's L.A., though. I think that's the only place he ends up. I don't think Toronto's in it. I really don't.
I think Toronto has a chance.
Yeah, I think Toronto's still in with a chance. I think that, you know, they endeared the city endeared themselves to Kawhi in such a really positive way. But for me, I'm still on the Clippers bandwagon. You know, I've been on that wagon for quite a while. I don't understand the Lakers thing. There's lots of rumors coming out, the fact that Kawhi spoke to Magic Johnson on the phone and was like, "Were you guys trying to trade for me?" and the San Antonio thing. And they were like, "Yeah, but Pop wanted too many picks and we couldn't do that." So it seems to me like, yeah, I mean, it's Magic Johnson. He's just going to do whatever's best for himself and his ego. So, I mean, the Lakers, I understand it from the fact that, like, they would be, you know, the three best players, three of the five, six best players in the league, and would be, like I said, in JBT, simply unfair. But at the same time, you know, I think Kawhi's a guy that prefers the spotlight a little bit to himself. You know, what it do? And I think what it do in Clipperland for me.
What it do, baby, Jack? Get it right.
Oh, what it do, baby.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, I honestly have no idea. Like you guys said, if he wants to go an easier route, you know, he's used to carrying a team, he'd go with the Lakers. Then there's a depth concern when you look at that team, though, because, like, if one of those guys gets injured, now all of a sudden you have to play every game. There's no such thing as load management because all three of those guys essentially need load management. Obviously, AD's younger, but he's missed his fair chunk of games. And on the bench, you don't really have anything. The Clippers are interesting. If he signs with the Clippers need to, you know, turn it up, and they need to find a trade to add another star because reports have come out that he wanted to play with another star if he goes to the Clippers. And obviously, he kind of knows what he's getting with the Raptors. It would possibly make sense for him to just be like, "All right, let me go to the Raptors, sign a 1+1. Next year, I'm the top of the free agent class, and then I can decide what I want to do."
In relation to the Raptors a little bit, Adrian Dizon has asked, if Kawhi leaves, who replaces him in Toronto? They're not going to replace anyone, obviously, but I think internally, it's Pascal Siakam.
Yeah. They don't have any salary cap. They're cap strapped, so it's just Siakam getting better. And then they're hoping OG, obviously, he was injured a lot of last season. Maybe he can come back and show some rookie flashes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lots of questions. I appreciate the people who have joined us.
Should we talk about the Knicks? Because I feel like we...
Yeah, let's shit on the Knicks. Sorry, am I fired? Am I allowed to swear?
Hey, you're a Brooklyn Buzz co-host, so you're allowed to say what you want about the Knicks.
I'd be fired if we weren't allowed to curse.
Yeah, you would have lost your job a long time ago, my dude.
You know, I'm actually going to say what the Knicks are doing isn't as terrible as it seems.
It's really not, actually.
The only one thing that they've done that's really bad is that they should have kept more cap space open because you don't need to spend all your cap space at the end of the season. to take on a bad contract and get some more assets. But what they did is a lot of these players are on team options for the second year, and they have a lot of role players that teams will be interested in and possibly trade for. You know, none of them are big name guys. You might not get any first round picks, or maybe it's a late first or highly protected or some second round picks. It's not the end of the world, and at least they'll be a little bit better. I mean, the only one that I'm not like a huge fan of is like Julius Randle for 20 plus mil, because I'm just not a Julius Randle guy.
I don't like the Taj Gibson one.
Yes, same.
The guy is how old? And like, what has he done? I mean, he was shooting a couple of threes for Minnesota. Nice. But I don't want to stunt the growth of a guy like Mitchell Robinson, who was probably the best player for the Knicks last season. You know, he was better than Kevin Knox by leaps and bounds. It's just a weird makeup. And obviously, you've got at least a shooter in Wayne Ellington. And Bobby Portis. And Reggie Bullock. So, I mean, there's the nucleus there where they're going to be, you know, competitive of sorts. But it's just a weird mismatch of a roster and just too many bigs. And, you know, I don't hate Julius Randle. Obviously, the contract structure for a lot of these guys isn't too bad. But, yeah, just there's too much money. And I think that I'm wondering who would have paid Portis? Who would have paid Julius Randle that much? And who would have paid Taj Gibson that much? You know, I'm not sure if the market was that saturated for them in the first place that you needed to pay even this much for such a small rate. I get you have to get to a salary cap floor, but I think you could have saved even a few million dollars just by paying them a little bit less.
I think you pay the overpay so you get the team option for the second year, because now you're in control of the contract. It's all essentially a one-year contract unless they like the player and they want to keep him. The Taj Gibson thing, I get it. Like, he's obviously, you're hoping he doesn't really play. He's your veteran presence, but essentially it's just a one-year deal for $10 million. All the guys could essentially be one-year deals, except Julius Randle. He's a three-year deal, and the third year is a team option. So it's like they still have the cap flexibility, and it's nice in the trading aspect is if they trade it to another team, they pick up that player, and then they could essentially just not pick up their option at the end of the year, and they open up that space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I like about the Knicks signings, I mean, the Taj Gibson one was a little bit eh. But, I mean, getting Ellington, Bullock, Randall is the one guy that you can kind of see what happens. But all of these guys are tradable. I don't think any of these contracts, I think, are too far out of the range of a contending team around February. So I think the Knicks have put themselves in the position to kind of grab as many assets as quickly as possible this offseason. Now, granted, there isn't any marquee free agent next offseason that's going to require these assets. But to sit on them for another year, not the worst. And then maybe in 2021, we're looking at the Knicks actually in the position to make an offseason move at a star.
Yeah, I think the other thing that maybe I would have, if I'm a Knicks fan, wishing that they signed maybe a couple more young guys, that there's more potential in like the guard spots. Because I think, you know, Jack mentioned this, a lot of them are just like forwards. Like, you sign Bobby Portis, you find Julius Randle, you sign Taj Gibson. They're all around the same height range. You know, you're going to start Mitchell Robinson. He's a guy you're looking for. It's been talked about Kevin Knox's best position is probably a four as well. So it's like, okay, what are we going to do with all of these like fours? Like, how are they all going to play?
Two more questions, homies. All right, we got, should the Clippers gamble and call the Wizards for Beal to appease Kawhi from Crimson Striker?
I would say let's get that deal on the table, ready to go. We sign Kawhi, we'll pull the trigger. If not, we're not going to do the deal. But Washington's been really stubborn in terms of like, hey, we're not going to trade Bradley Beal. So it would have to probably be a really good offer, and then you end up overpaying, and then you're kind of messing up some of your roster.
Yeah, I would keep Bradley Beal if you could, because you need to maintain some relevancy in a city where basketball is almost like the fourth most popular sport. And Bradley Beal gives you some cachet, and at least he sells tickets, as Nick and I like to say. But yeah, I think I would keep Bradley Beal unless the offer is Lakers-like for him.
I'm not moving Beal. It would take a lot to move Beal at this point. Beal's still 25. Yeah, you hate the John Wall contract, but I'm not giving up Beal from the Washington Wizards, not at this point in time. And also, Jabari Parker's a free agent. Lakers definitely get him if there's no one else left. Just
sure. I think on the Beal front, though, like, part of you has to think it makes sense to maybe trade a player before he demands to be traded, because then you maintain leverage, you can get a bigger offer. If they necessarily demand a trade, you know, the AD thing, the Lakers still had to give up a lot, but in a lot of situations when a player demands a trade, which we've seen with like Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, like, you don't necessarily get the asset. And I think like truly what the Wizards need to do is actually just hire a GM, have a plan, go through a full rebuild and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way to go. The last one, insert cool name, is Rondo still a starting caliber point guard? In his opinion, no.
No, he hasn't been for a while.
Maybe you get him at that vet minimum. What money would you give him, the vet minimum?
Yeah, I would probably give him the room exception, which is like $4 million maybe. Like, that would probably be the most as a backup point guard. But, I mean, you could probably get him for the veteran minimum if he's staying in L.A. and playing with LeBron, and, you know, he was already been there, so.
We shall wait, I guess.
All right. Any other teams you think deserve some love that we didn't talk about?
I think our listeners and watchers let us cover pretty much all the big ones.
The only thing, I guess, let's just touch on Hassan Whiteside real quick. Do you think it'll work out better for him in Portland? Obviously, there's a good chance that he can end up starting now because Nurkic is going to miss a good chunk of the season.
Yeah, I think that having Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to keep him in line there, I think will probably help because we know, and obviously, you know, he didn't mesh well with Eric Spoelstra, who is one of the most accomplished coaches in this league. You know, Terry Stotts has leadership on the floor that I think will be able to go, you know, Damian Lillard isn't going to take the shit from Hassan Whiteside that, you know, he gave to the rest of the Miami Heat roster. So I think it could be a nice enough fit. You know, I think that he could put up some numbers. I don't know how it doesn't necessarily take them a step above, but, you know, I think it's a nice little move, you know, from the route of the Portland Trailblazers. I, again, would have preferred them to get Kevin Love. Maybe that still happens in some form or capacity. But Hassan Whiteside, I think, will be an okay fit there.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the short term, it's really important for Portland, because Nurkic, who knows what he comes back? What does he look like? I mean, the guy really did snap his leg.
And he's a big dude. He's not Gordon Hayward or Caris LeVert. Like, he's a big boy.
Right. So what does – I wouldn't be shocked if his rehab time is just longer. And I think the good thing about Hassan Whiteside is, yes, the downside of Whiteside is, like, you can't look at his stats. Whiteside's one of those players where, like, eye test is important. The blocks look nice on paper, but he chases blocks on the court and puts the team in bad positions defensively because he's being selfish. And then offensively, yeah, decent in the pick and roll, decent around the rim, good rebounder, obviously. I think he'll be utilized by Lillard and McCollum. Him being expiring does make, I think, more – I think the – you mentioned this earlier, Nick. The thought of Kevin Love being used as possibly like a trade asset in a Hassan Whiteside flip makes sense to me, because then you get a dynamic third scorer in Love to pair up alongside Lillard and McCollum, and they can actually make a real push to try and at least get to the finals again in the Western Conference. So I think Whiteside's kind of the move to maybe make a bigger move down the line more than anything. But it's enough right now to keep the team above water while Nurkic recovers.
Yeah, and he's expiring. It's a big chunk of expiring. And, like, the Cavs would just be partially – I mean, I'm sure they're going to want assets in a deal if it included Kevin Love, but they'll be happy to get the cap off their books.
Yeah.
Did you guys think much of the news coming out with Enes Kanter saying that he had, like, 6 minutes, even though apparently it was 45 minutes, to make a decision to re-up in Portland?
I mean, it is what it is. Like, I think that's something you kind of anticipate sometimes going to free agency. Like, a lot of these decisions have to happen fast, like, especially the way that the first couple hours of free agency went. Like, I'm not surprised they told him, hey, we have a decision. But Enes Kanter probably has to have, like, an idea of numbers in his mind. His agent has to have an idea of numbers in his mind and what he wants to do. It's not like free agency, your thought process for free agency started on June 30th at 6 p.m. You've had all month since you've been knocked out of the playoffs to think about this, and I'm sure you've had communication with other teams.
Yeah, Enes Kanter's bum.
I mean, I don't know how much I believe it. It is what it is. I mean, good for him.
I mean, for Boston, I mean, at least they get a scoring center, but his defense is a major downgrade from Al Horford.
That's going to be fun.
I heard the news, actually I was listening to the Low podcast and he broke that on the pod. That's the only way I actually knew that happened. But I don't hate it for the fact that, like, one of the biggest issues with the Celtics has been their rebounding. I mean, they just haven't been a good rebounding team. And Kanter does give them rebounding and low post scoring. But like you mentioned, Nick, I mean, this is a terrible defender.
Yeah, I mean, and, like, you're just trying to get him and Kemba Walker in pick and roll. And Kemba's not as bad as a defender as some people make him seem, but he's still undersized. So yeah. That's where you attack Boston instantly. Brad Stevens is going to have to get really creative. They do have some other good defenders on the roster, so maybe they can kind of make up for it. But,
like, their small ball lineup of Kemba, like, let's say Hayward, Brown, Tatum, and Kanter, like that is just, oh my, that's a defensive nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, I think at points you probably would rather play Daniel Theis because
he's a free agent still. He's not technically not on the Celtics.
Oh, well, there you go. Is he restricted though? I think he might be restricted.
I believe he is restricted.
So they should be able to retain him. If not, then hey, things could get really funky for the Celtics. They do have draft picks though, and they can still make trades for other players.
You hate to say it.
All right, guys. Anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here?
The Faceless Man, anything?
No, I think that's it from The Faceless Man.
All right, guys. As always, big thanks to everybody who checked in, especially these last 2 days, dropping questions, thoughts. We appreciate it. It gives us a lot of content. We like interacting with you guys. You can always check us out iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. And I mentioned this in the last show. Check out OTGBasketball.com. Staff is doing an amazing job going with some in-depth recaps of some of these signings within 24 hours of the signing. So you're getting fresh content right away.
Nice. Peace out, knuckleheads.